tana tana junju na le ya ma zo ta te ji da ben lo ha ja ji ya lo lost na mi da ji sta success ye be ku du le na nga ge ge ya ge nyang ge yo be indu za ne ha ja ta la ta be ko le ya nga ge yo ya ge nyang ge yo re ka da chue mo yin bu yo ya ge nyang ge yo be indu tu du so so ji che bu yo re ta ha ja ku be ko le ya lo ha ja shun ni sen so shi ni ya shun be ya ni Dia kasore shumbe wangi, kerana siapa yang ni, jika yang caya ni, yang kalau jika yang kita, ada hajang thalat cakap ni kalau dah hajang shumbe ni kalau ni buti gajian resta jadi itu dini ni ni buat tenggu yari, ni buat susu tenggu yari. Tapi di mana hajang sem shumbe ni kalau kita ni buat yang kalah selam na, tapi jika ni dengar macam macam ni.
So one has to be cautious both at times when one. Is very successful since at that time one could become prideful and get carried away with one's own accomplishments and one needs to engage in antidotes in order to cause the mind to become deflated and then at other times when one has undergone lack of success and so forth there is a danger of becoming depressed therefore at that time one has to engage in techniques to cause one's mind to become heightened.
Then you, Juju, ne, then Songya, did you Songya? Then that, Buhajang, be Songja, Tamu, do the telling, na ya. Any decision, be Juju, are it? Then you do, ne, today, ge, zombie, gen the China, zombie, top, ge, gen the China, ne. Many, many, the top two, are it? Then, Dada, Mirke, any.
Shantideva sets forth techniques for overcoming depression, such as that one can reflect on the fact that even bugs and so forth, worms and bugs, have the Buddha nature, and thus when they meet with certain conditions, will even they will turn into Buddhas. Thus, I have attained a human body, I'm in a very precious situation, and of course have the Buddha nature, how much better situation I am in. And similarly also the great saints and so forth of the past to achieve the high levels were people who had a similar life basis, who had the same sort of life basis as I have. Thus, there isn't anything that they didn't do anything that I can't do. Through this, it is possible to generate a strong will. And we were talking about this before. What is the nature of the developmental lineage, and how is it transformed into the form body?
Maumbalia Sami Kasore Sabameveta Chugumolia Durungi Chi Kasore Nuber Chunguba. This is a similar. Nuber, and the king is set up to the treaty.
We have in our continuums now the capacity such that when we meet with certain conditions. In the future, we will, manifest the non-contaminated wisdom consciousness. And this sort of lineage refers to the time when that capacity has been nourished or activated. The theory of evolution describes development of higher forms of life out of lower forms, such as man out of the animals. Buddhism depicts cyclic existence as going up and down and around, or up and down. Can His Holiness reconcile these two views?
The evolution of the
Evolution The explanation of evolution, which has to do with the development of this particular world, and the explanation that our own birth, what do you say, our own series of births is indefinite, or it's indefinite where we'll be reborn, are completely different explanations. I think I left out that in terms of the indefiniteness, one doesn't have to be reborn here, one can be reborn in higher states in other places. A human being reborn as a god, or a god being reborn as a hell being, up and down. But one problem is the difference in interpretation on how this world system first formed. So now I'm going to take the position of Vasubandhu.
In his Abhidhammakoshakarika, he said the Tama Kashurita
that when the first beings were formed in this world system, their average lifespan was numberless. One's body, the people's body at that time, was like that of a deity, some sort of spiritual body. And they didn't need to use coarse food. That there weren't any males and females. At that time, their food was the food of deep meditation. And then gradually things got worse and worse. The lifespan became shorter and shorter. And it will continue on getting shorter down to a minimum of 10 years.
That's the evolution theory, Darwin. Darwin theory.
Darwin. Thus, it's quite complicated to put this together with Darwin's theory.
That compromise can say.
So then how are we going to make a compromise?
I don't know.
So now we may have some fun with Vasubandhu again. Perhaps some of you would be interested in this type of mystery. Even in our own generation in Tibet, there were like gods, I would say, children of deities. Children of gods. There can be a connection, a relationship between humans and non-humans. In the present older generations of Tibetans, there was my father's generation. There was a person in northern Tibet,
In the Hori area.
In
You see, one man called Kajadramna. The Amati, what is it? Ninja Tang energy, Bogusha. Ninja Tang, Tachi, eulogy.
And he, what about? He was, let's see, his mother slept with a deity, right?
Yula.
Yeah, a deity of her area and gave birth to him. He was very powerful and clever.
Robbery. Bandit.
Bandit.
Very powerful. Physically, very powerful.
He was so powerful that no one could overcome him.
These stories. That's the compromise.
So perhaps the best compromise is to say that there is one level of beings in the type that is undergoing the type of process that Vasubandhu is talking about, coming down, what do you say, in a process of going downwards, and that there's another type of being on the same planet that is going through the process as described by Darwin. In our own Tibetan history, the Tibetan race is said to have come from a monkey who was a bodhisattva mating with a female demon. This is probably like the system put forth by
Vasubandhu
from the point of view of the mother. From the point of view of the father, like Darwin. It's also explained that there are Tibetans who came from mixtures with Indians.
So you see many theories, many explanations.
So I think it could be many, we would say that the many theories could all be involved. It's an important thing to look into.
That is the cause. Archaeologists are digging something, certain, you see, bones and these things, and test, experiment. This is very, very necessary, very important. Now you see,
for instance, there's a great deal of controversy with regard to how many years have passed since Buddha's death. In one system, it's 3,000 and some years. 2,800
and so.
2,500 and so. That it can't be all of them, it has to be one of them. This is not something that can be figured out now by usual sorts of calculations and scholarship, but rather by investigating the remains of Buddha. One has to investigate the relics.
The scripture is
In one of the Buddhist scriptures, he says that after a certain length of time, in the what snowy country, by a lake, a lake will subside, and a snowy country will be formed, and beings will take rebirth there.
So now you see, and I think around 47 or 48. Some of you may know the two Austrian, Afschnatter and Heinrich Haller, as a prisoner of war, escaped from India, come to Tibet. And they worked some, I'd say, employment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Employment for the Tibetan government. The Afschnatter carried work and construction work for hydroelectric. And he made one channel or canal. While he's, you see, doing certain thing, they found what you call the subtraction signal.
In one square. There was like a square vest with a chest with a cover on it.
In it, a complete human bones, physical bone, with some article. I think some stones. Muni. Muni. What called muni?
Something that's hung on the neck.
Some dead, and also you see some iron.
Iron, small iron knife.
Oh, knife like that. And later, you see, he sent to India, I think to Germany or Austria, later. Then they, you see, found that human bone 4,000 years. Years old. So that means when Buddha was in India, in Tibet, there are already human beings there. That's now quite obvious. One thing. But the Hindu, therefore we should interpret, you see, that verses that not whole Tibet, but you see, in Lhasa area, during Buddha's time, remained as a lake. Now, for this, you see, another reason, scientific reason. I think again now, around 53, 54, one group of Chinese team, archaeologists were, and miner.
Geologist.
You see, and searching something. In northern Lhasa area, near the northern range of mountain of Lhasa Valley, the foothill of that that area, that team found fossil.
Yes.
Fossil. A big leaf. See, very big. And completely transformed into stone. So now is it that one of the member of that team mentioned According to Tibetan history, Lhasa area in ancient time in how to say, in lake. So it is true, because you see, that leaf, you see, fossil. Namu in Lhasa ying di tsache, ki di tsache, thali ya nakse ya che. Oh, those chen that dead which you tasa vishta those or this group.
That fossil is a clear sign that formerly where Lhasa is now, there was a great lake that was surrounded by forest, and that leaf was growing on the edge.
So you see, the Lhasa, particular Lhasa area, lake, in Yang, around the Tibet as a whole, there are already beings, human beings. So it's very interesting, you see, to go combine our own scripture and the, you see, actual finding and go together, I think very, very useful, very helpful.
Is there potential for women to become Arya Bodhisattvas, Arhats, Lamas, reincarnations, and other such venerable members of the Sangha?
Did they check them? Indeed.
Of course.
No differences.
But there is one difference with respect to the
difference. I mean, sorry. One problem is the about the bhikshuni. You see, since you see, in order to take a bhikshuni vow, you need a bhikshuni. I mean, you should have combination, male monk as well as female monk. So bhikshu as well as bhikshuni together. So since in Tibet never happened bhikshuni from India. So you see, in Tibet in the past, you see, lower monk,
novice,
you see, they cannot take bhikshuni vow because there was no bhikshuni right from the beginning. Now at present, among the Chinese tradition, Mahayana tradition, there are bhikshunis.
In terms of the transmission of the vows, one needs to know that there are 18 sub-schools of the Vaibhashika school. And there are 4 basic schools. The Theravada.
Pajantava.
The Mahasanghikas. Then the Samatiyas.
Then the Shitamjiva Mahatava.
Then the Sarvastivadins.
Now see, Thais and Sri Lanka, these Buddhist countries, their bhikshu vow according this Theravada school. We Tibetan, this Savastin,
Sarvastivadin.
You see, according this tradition, for bhikshu, the precepts 227. We Tibetan, according to Savastivadin, 253. I checked, you see, these the differences. I found it is very minor differences. They basically, you see, the main points, main precepts are exactly same. Now you see, according to Savasiddhivadin, in order to make bhikshuni, you must have, you see, both bhikshu and bhikshunis. So maybe that the ganali the tradition jarba. And also you see, I checked, I investigated thoroughly. In Ceylonese tradition as well as Thai's tradition, You see, according to their tradition, there was no bhikshuni. There was no bhikshuni's tradition, bhikshuni's kasa, continuation of bhikshuni vow. I mean, in Vinaya Sutra, there are mentioned about bhikshuni's, you see, rules, but in practical, discontinue. Same, similar.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Chinese tradition, at the moment I'm, investigating about, you see, their tradition. If that tradition is something, kasure, reliable, you see, when we talk about the Bhikshuni or about the Vinaya Sutra's vow, the lineage must go to the Buddha himself. The tantric vows, these things not necessary. You see, some really qualified Lama with his own vision, so you see, some
Shesik, visions,
you see, he can take the certain tantric practice. But in the question of Vinaya Sutra, that, you see, won't allow. We must strictly, Kasota. strictly, then Kasota is, Tanang is a merchant. Tanang is a merchant, that dog will run. Tanang is a merchant.
Without any kind of visionary.
Oh, yes, yes.
Orthodox.
The Orthodox are malicious. Because our own must go strictly according to the tradition. So this is, you see, at the moment I'm not very clear. So if the Bhikshuni tradition is very correct, very, you see, authentic, then it is very good and very useful. So this is one problem,
mm-hmm.
not yet solved
mm-hmm.
in the Buddhist community. All right?
That's it.
Oh, sorry, that was more fun today.
It took a little longer today. Sorry. I've just been carrying on. So what I'm apologizing for is not going on to the more serious matter and just telling these stories.
Yeah, that's the name because it's Tuyagi.
Then last time we talked about the proper posture to assume in order to achieve a calm abiding of the mind. The next step is to investigate, what do you say, to watch one's own breath. One should leave one's breath naturally, moving in and out gently, without forcing it strongly or making it extremely weak.
As
Maitreya says in his differentiation between the middle way and the extremes, calm abiding is achieved by way of getting rid of the five faults by way of the eight antidotes. So what are the five faults? Laziness? Forgetting the precept or object.
This one, Dhamma Jeva, Thunda, Midin Jeva, this one, object slipped. Dhamma Jeva. Chinguini, Sosu Chana, Turi, Chinguini, Chikdu Chana, Nare, Ta Chinguini Chana.
And then laxity and excitement, if you consider them separately, then they come to be six faults, together they make five.
Chinguini Chana. Ta Chinguini Chunwe Tse, Nyambu Duchewe, simjung samba che ya tang ne chu gor
nyeba
nyeba she gor wa chu gi chu ne se nyambu du mishi bet nyeba chik che
then the next is to not apply the antidotes when either laxity or excitement arise
ta jingu ma chu ne gabla ani nyambu du chi ta na nyeba re
And then the next is over application of the antidotes, meaning to apply the antidotes to laxity and excitement when one no longer has laxity or excitement. In order to get rid of these, 8 antidotes are described. The antidotes to laziness are 4. Faith, aspiration, exertion, and pliancy. One can't have pliancy in the beginning, for pliancy is a state in which one has gotten rid of bad physical and mental states and one's mind is serviceable in any virtuous direction.
So thus
pliancy is not something that can come now
early
in the practice, but one can think about the values of pliancy now. So the first antidote then is faith, the faith of seeing the value of meditative stabilization. And in dependence on that, one generates aspiration for meditative stabilization. And in dependence on that, exertion toward it. And thus these 4 serve as the antidotes to laziness. As a fault of forgetting the object, one needs mindfulness, the antidote of mindfulness. And even though mindfulness also acts as an antidote to laxity and excitement, the main antidote to laxity and excitement is introspection. As an antidote to not applying the antidotes to either laxity or excitement when they do arise, one engages in the application of those antidotes. And then as an antidote to over-application of the antidotes when laxity and excitement has been already gotten rid of, one needs the equanimity of forsaking applying those antidotes. So then what kind of object can be used? In general terms, Buddha set forth in sutra several types of objects, pervasive objects. This is something that applies to all of the objects of karma abiding. And applies also to the consciousness that is imagining that object.
That
there are four types of such, one in which one does not analyze analytical object and a non-analytical object. So from the point of view of the consciousness that is doing the that is doing the imagination, there is the non-analytical and the analytical, and from the point of view of the object, there's one which is called the limit of things. And which is of two types, one the mode of being, one the mode of being of phenomena, and the other being the various types of phenomena. And then there is the imagination of that which one is purposely trying to achieve, which is considered to be calm abiding itself. In other words, so then how does this become an object? Once one has attained calm abiding, that mind of calm abiding itself can become an object of the process. Then with respect to then there is a type of object that is set forth for the sake of purifying one's predominant form of afflictive emotion. There are five types of objects set forth, these being for persons who as their predominant affliction predominant afflictive emotion have desire as it, or hatred, or obscuration, pride, or discursiveness, too much conceptuality. For a person who is predominated by desire, that person as an object meditates on ugliness. As an antidote to hatred, one cultivates love. As an antidote to obscuration, one cultivates an understanding of the of dependent arising. And as an antidote to pride, one cultivates an understanding of the divisions of the constituents. As an antidote to too much conceptuality, one meditates on the inhalation and exhalation of the breath.
Burmese tradition,
in the Burmese tradition, they do a lot of meditation, emphasizing concentration on the inhalation and exhalation of the breath. And then with regard to objects for becoming skillful or wise, there are the aggregates, sources, constituents, and so forth. And as objects which serve as means of purifying afflictive emotions, There are meditations in which one views one's own level as gross and a higher level of mind as peaceful. And then those that have the aspects of the four truths, four noble truths. Thus in that, you have the aspect of realizing selflessness. So those are objects in general. If one asks what sort of specific object should one use, one should use an object in accordance with one's own disposition. And for those persons who are predominated by desire or hatred, as said earlier, there's meditation on ugliness, or in the second case, cultivation of love. But also for those persons with too much conceptuality, meditation, concentration on the inhalation and exhalation of the breath is very helpful. But then also, sometimes it's helpful not to have any such object, but to concentrate on the mind itself. But the to achieve calm abiding of the mind within concentrating on the mind itself is a bit more difficult. And there's also a danger of generating what's called problems with the life wind, some kind of anxiety. The nervous breakdown. I've known some people who have worked at cultivating the calm abiding of the mind within concentrating on the mind itself, and in time they've become very nervous. But for somebody who has understood what emptiness is, that person can concentrate on emptiness itself without doing any analysis, just setting and stabilizing meditation on it. And then in Tantra or Mantra, there is meditation using one's own, what do you say, a divine body as the object. One can take the Buddha body in front of oneself and concentrate on that. And for a non-Buddhist, for instance, could concentrate on Christ. One could meditate on a bit of light in the Hindu meditations and so forth, or one can meditate on a letter. There are many such objects. This practice exists, is prevalent throughout the Buddhist and non-Buddhist systems. But if a Buddhist meditates, say, on a Buddha's body,